6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm David. Come on in. I'll make some tea.
Hey, everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
This is Legion Podcast episode 20.
Yay.
Yeah. I'm so glad excited to be back. Yeah, I just binged the first 2 seasons over the last week and a half to get it all, back in my head and just totally reinforced, A, how much I love the show, and B, how grody that ending was.
Yeah, that season 2 finale just kind of leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth a little bit. But aside from that, I like you. I didn't binge it all in a week, but I took the whole month of June and watched seasons 1 and 2. And yeah, it definitely, brought back the love for it. And oh my gosh, this episode, I'm really excited. So excited for it to be back and really excited to talk about it because it was so good.
Right. Me too. I'm so happy it's on. Now that I've binged all the ones that I've seen before and gotten, seen some things that I didn't notice before, but just refresh myself on how great it was. And then to have a new fresh one to watch now is awesome to get new content. So I'm excited. Before we get into this week's episode, I just wanted to mention, speaking of cult leaders, that this is a joint production with Bald Move, and Aaron is going to be joining us next week and every week thereafter.
Cool.
A. Ron Hubbard. So that's what he calls himself.
Does he really?
It is, yeah, Jim Jones. And this week you can hear A. Ron's thoughts on the season 3 premiere on their Bald Move TV podcast. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, and you can also just search for Bald Move TV wherever you get podcasts. So if you want to know what he thinks about the pilot, then he'll be on with us after that. So let's get into our top 5 highlights. It's our top 5 highlights for Legion Season 3, Episode 1, Chapter 20. Before we do, I wanted to just reiterate why we do a top 5 highlights instead of just going through scene by scene. And I like that because we can make these connections that span across the episode, talk about thematic things or stylistic or character arcs, things like that. And also it just feels a little bit more how people normally talk about something. We wouldn't be like, hey, what'd you think about Legion last night? What'd you think about that first thing? Okay, what about the second scene and the third scene? Don't talk about the end. So I just like that. It's interesting. And it kind of fits with Legion because Legion can be so chaotic and not non-linear. It's actually harder to prepare because we take notes for the whole episode. And then once we're done with that, we rearrange them into these topics, but I just feel like it's more, it's an interesting way to do it. So now that that's all said, what did you think? You really liked it
in general. Really, really liked this episode. I thought it was a really great way to start it off. I thought that it had all of Holly's best traits with his inventiveness, questions of morality, and blasts of fun sprinkled throughout. Mm-hmm.
And also really dark violence too.
Yes.
It can be like kind of cartoony fun, and then somebody gets imploded and blood spurts out.
Yes. Somebody can get burned and singed in a wall, or you know, shot in the head with a finger gun, and
then there's some cool music.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to be back in this world. I like that we're going in this new direction. I'm a little bummed because it looks like a three-act play, and in act three we get to see David become this uber villain, but I'm ready for that, so fine.
Yeah. I'm kind of okay with it. I think that's I don't think this is a redemptive story, so I'm just good.
You could be wrong.
It could be.
You never know. Okay, what's your number five?
So my number five, I just want to start with the visuals, because that is what's so great about Legion. And everyone who watches knows that. And I think most really appreciate it, because if you don't, why would you be watching? Because there's so much of it. But this episode did not disappoint. Like the opening scene when Switch is like crawling through that tunnel and she's going through buildings and then like through trees. I thought that was all beautiful. I really loved that musical sequence that they had when she comes through.
Mm-hmm. With the wardrobe.
Yeah, with the wardrobe. The like
hanging clothes, yeah.
Yeah, like you're at a dry cleaner's or something and all these clothes are shifting all over the place and she squeezes through. I loved that. I love that imagery. I love the colors, the bright colors of the clothes as she comes through. I loved that we got a musical sequence, you know, straight away.
Mm-hmm. I really liked that the girl was sitting at the desk and just had this blank look on her face, and then she just slides off. It's like, hey, come back here. And then when it looks like Switch is going to guess wrong or can't answer the riddle, they're all just like drifting away like they're going to disappear forever. No, it's the salmon. And then you get this really like uplifting musical number that's just a pleasure of the ears and a feast for the eyes. And it's like, congratulations, you
exactly.
win.
You answer correctly, you win, and you get to go through this little tunnel again. But, you know, that was like a real band. They're called the Super Organisms. Mm-hmm. Or Super Organism, that's the real band, and that's their song that they sang in that sequence. And I loved it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I love that he got the real band to do that. And
I didn't realize they're on screen. Okay.
Cool. Yeah, they're on screen. They're in that scene as she's turning around, as Switch is kind of looking at everybody at those little individual like desks that spin around the room. Those are all members of the band, that Super Organism band. And they when they're playing those instruments, that's really them. And that girl that sings is really the singer. So I love that Noah Hawley got them. And of course, the song totally fit, right? So I thought that was
about,
really great.
Yeah, the mind and things you want. And I don't know. I didn't study it too hard, but it sounded like it was just trying to be an appealing kind of a dream, mental dream song or something.
Yeah, it was really good. The Division 3 invasion, when they do invade David's home, and the fighting sequence in the hallway, like you said, it was, you know, had these dark images as well as the funny and light stuff. But you had like David, it's, I know he's like not supposed to be a good guy. He's a bad guy. And I feel almost kind of guilty for liking some of the things he does. But I love it when he demonstrates his power, because he's so, so powerful. He's a very powerful mutant. So to see how he can just like wave his hand and like wave the bullets away and flip a shelf that lands on people, he can wave his hand and Clark catches on fire there in the hallway. He can, you know, point his finger at someone like a gun and it blows their head off. I love that whole fighting sequence. I thought that was great. And when Farouk gets kind of like tackled and gets pushed into another doorway.
Followers.
Yeah, that was really great.
You know, I wouldn't necessarily at this point just paint David as a bad guy, unless I'm forgetting something. I mean, what he did to Sid was really bad.
Yes.
But I don't know if he deserves to be killed.
Right.
You know, I don't think he's necessarily, I really do, like, even watching it again, and I know, I remember I felt this way last year too. I just think the Shadow King poisoned everyone against him. Mm-hmm. And when he saw that, he tried to take it out of Sid's head with his powers, and I didn't approve of that. I understood the impulse to want to do it, and I think that's where David goes wrong. He's so powerful that he'll just use his powers to alter people without a second thought, but he feels like he's doing it for the right reasons. And so it's right. definitely gray area, but it I'm is. Not sure yet about that he's earned just kill on sight, you know?
No, I don't think he's earned that. I don't think that they should just... Because I don't know that the whole... good guy, bad guy thing is so black and white in this show. And that's one thing that makes it really great is, you know, because Division 3, in my opinion, in this show can just as easily, or at least in this episode, can be just as easily seen as the bad guy. They were willing to kill. Yeah, violent. And then just when they were talking about Switch, they're like, oh, okay, well, we'll kill her too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't know anything about her.
Right. They think that their goal is to protect humanity, and she's collateral damage, which is a horrible term. And I mean, I think, you know, different people are going to have different kinds of judgment about that kind of behavior, and there's validity to all of it. I really do still think, though, that Farouk is just a bad guy.
Yeah, well, I do think that he is firmly a bad guy. I don't trust him, really. But I think that to say for Division 3 or to say that David, either one of the good mm-hmm. guys or the bad guys, those are gray areas. Farouk, I think, is just straight up bad. I don't think he'll you know, change. But I could be wrong about that, yeah. But I just don't.
You can't ever take anything for granted on this show because the ground's always shifting.
Exactly. But I thought all of that was really great imagery. The timeline when Switch like creates those doors and she goes into that hallway with, and it has those timeline visuals with the 1 hour ago symbols and things on them. I thought that was really clever, and I like those visuals.
Really cool, interesting way to represent time travel.
Yes, it was so good. And then, like, the alchemist when he's being yanked by the giant hook and his teacup spins in the air for like a full second. Those are just wonderful.
So cartoony.
Yeah, just wonderful visuals and just pleasing to the eye, which is what I love about this show. Mm-hmm. It's like always at the top of my list, just, you know. And then some scenes, of course, you're looking at and you're like, it's like being high on drugs without the side effects. So that's a fun part of it for me. But that's my number five.
Yeah, the hook I really thought was fun and funny. And then I love that we see it from another perspective later. Sydney goes, Clark, I see him, get the hook.
And like it's a real thing, like get the hook.
Yeah, right. It wasn't just some thing that they don't explain. That kind of a thing in this show to me is just sort of showcasing that it has this freewheeling attitude, and it's like a statement saying no need to think about this too logically, we're having fun here. Mm-hmm. You know, like we can just put little things that if you are thinking about it as something in the real world would not make sense at all, but it's more like a symphony or something.
Exactly.
Or a poem or something. Okay.
That.
My number five is David's cult, and I really dig that they're going in the direction of a cult because I've always been fascinated with cults.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And I think, too, that the way a cult operates, the dynamics of the cult, the reason people are attracted to it, and all of that is so related to people's psychology and their mental state and preying on psychological weaknesses with the promise of feeling better and all of the kinds of things that are perfect for this show, which deals with your state of mind and, you know, mental issues and things like that. So it is a great direction and perfect if you're going to turn David into a villain this season to have him be a cult leader.
Absolutely.
And I think it makes sense for David because last season, you know, what really tripped him up was he realized that he was trying to prove to himself that he was a good person. I'm a good person. I deserve love. Mm-hmm. And that's where he suddenly that was thrown into huge doubt because Sid didn't trust him anymore. And then it made it seem like, oh, maybe this whole thing with Sid was just for him to fill up this void, and it was more about him than it was about her. And it was a narcissistic kind of thing. And as a cult leader, Switch asks him, what is this place? He says, people have their pain, their hearts are sad, their minds are tired. I help them. All I ask is that they stay and keep me company after, take care of the house, love each other. I need that love. So if he's being at all honest there, it's still on a grander scale about creating all this love, you know, this mm-hmm. system where he can get everyone's love.
Yep.
And it's working. Like, people are saying things like, his thoughts are magic, light years from home. It's prayers mixed with dreams. His spirit is the music and the word. So it's just feeding into that. But as we all know, these things never end well.
No.
Like,
history, I know, tells you, us.
Yeah. I mean, you've been following this whole Nexium thing.
Yep.
With Keith Raniere, who had this, what turned into a sex cult, and he fled to Mexico with a bunch of girls from the cult, and the feds tracked him down and marched him out at gunpoint, and now he's in jail and on trial. And I don't know. I could totally imagine it going something like that. I think already he comes out in the way he's speaking to Switch, have some tea, you know, he's kind of seems smooth, but to me, mm-hmm. it reminded me of last season when he was exploring Sid's mind and he was challenged with trying to figure her out, and he kept coming up with the wrong answers, and she said, nope, try again.
Yeah.
And he was like, one time he said, oh, I know what this is. You're afraid that if I see how you really are, I'm not going to love you. And he sounds kind of like he's trying to be paternal and comforting, but it's just comes out douchey.
Yeah. Well, it's like he was trying really hard to say the right things. Like, he thought that's what she wanted to hear.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's also like he's acting like he's the answer to this person's prayers, you know, like mm-hmm. he's all that, basically.
Yeah. Very narcissistic.
So, yeah. Yeah. And also, like a lot of cult leaders, he's paranoid about his enemies, but now he's actually right because D3 is out to kill him.
Yeah.
And anyway, it makes sense that he would create this cult to try and get everyone's love, and also to create this group of people who he can sow this paranoia of division three, the forces of division, and try to have them help protect him, which they were, like you said, they pushed Shadow King out of the way and everything like that. And so what it ends up being is this big love-in, which basically is him blissing everyone out with this blue ooze, which yeah. is a callback to when him and back in the Lenny/Benny days mm-hmm. talking about drugs. Why is it blue? It's always blue.
It's always blue, man. it's in that frog. She puts yeah. the drugs in the frog, and the smoke comes out, and they're, you know, filling it out there on the floor.
Right. So I think that connection is to say that this is sort of a similar situation where they're all kind of being, you know, they think that they're healing, but really they're just being numbed out, maybe. And there's this pig with its big teats, which is like yeah. everybody sucking at the teats of David.
I'm wondering if we're going to talk about that giant pig that's smoke coming out. I thought I had to rewind that times.
I know.
Whoa. What am I watching? What is that?
I thought we would see people sucking on the teats, but I don't think they actually were.
Yeah, it's, you didn't, like, necessarily have to. You could just, because the smoke was coming out. If you're just hovering, you're going to get it. Yeah, you're going to.
Contact high.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, what's your number four?
My number four is just the introduction to Switch. In that whole open sequence that we get with her. So we see that it looks like she lives alone. She may, I guess, have a servant, but she basically lives alone. Her dad visits her at breakfast via a TV, which mm-hmm. thought, okay, that's interesting.
I thought, I mean, there's a lot of kind of almost stereotypically when there's not much connection between a parent and a child, and they're rich, that mm-hmm. will show them at opposite ends of a really long dining table. Mm-hmm. But this time is the connection is so lousy that he's not even there. He's just via TV and only for a few seconds.
Yeah. Very telling, I think, this relationship that she apparently has with her dad, or lack of relationship, maybe. We find out that he collects robots. And then, you know, because I'm thinking, what is she like, an exchange student or something? Why is she living there alone? Why is her father not there, or, you know, around? Are they not living? Clearly, I guess, not living in the same home. We find out that she can time travel, which I'm really interested in. I think it's fascinating, you know, that she has this power. I am a little bit curious about her power exactly, and what her power actually is. And then I think it was really inventive, you know, how these clues are being left for her, that you see pictures of the Vermilion and Admiral Fukuyama, and, you know, she's being told to find the pregnant virgin, orange fish, look for a yellow bus that isn't yellow. I thought that was interesting. And then I was curious as to why she trusts David and not Farouk when Farouk confronts her. She seems to be very intuitive. Like, she seemed very sure of herself. She seemed to be able to see right through Farouk. Because, like we were kind of saying earlier, we could be wrong. I could be wrong. I do believe Farouk is definitely a bad guy. No gray area with him at all. I think he's got a lot of people fooled and he's manipulating them. Mm-hmm. But she was able to, first meeting, like, just see right through him. And I was curious, you know, what it is about her, you know, that she can, I don't know if it's a part of her, you know, power, if she's just that intuitive, or she's that street smart and just has that within her to read people or not. But I thought that was interesting that she was able to read him right away. And so I like her just in general. I'm always kind of worried when they start introducing new characters. I mean, we're in the third and final season. There's only 8 episodes, and I'm like, oh gosh, now we've got a new character. So I was kind of hesitant. I was just kind of watching, and I was really within just a few minutes in, I was totally fascinated with her, and I was completely on board with her being in the show. I think she's a great fit. So I'm curious what you think about her.
Are you sure there's only 8?
Yeah, there's only 8.
For some reason, I thought there was 13. Well, yeah, let me just go ahead and make my number 4 about her then. And as far as, well, I was trying to figure out why she was there at the cult. Mm-hmm. And she says, well, I'm there because you need me, because you have this time travel ad, which I love that he just put out like a want ad for a time traveler and it got answered. Yeah. It's a little, and it's funny because I am judging the writing in that, oh, it's so convenient that she got there right when you finally got killed and then could use her. Like, if she would have gotten there at any other time in this series, it wouldn't have mattered, but mm-hmm. just the right moment, but whatever. But then he's like, so how are you? And he keeps asking, and I think he's trying to get from her, like, you know, what... Maybe it's like a cult leader would ask that so he can find something that is wrong that he could use to get her feeling like she's dependent on him.
He can read her mind. That's why I was so curious about that. Yeah. Because he told her straight up. He's like, she's like, you know, don't, what did she say? Don't you trust me or something? Or what about trust? And he goes, tried that. Yeah. I'd rather, you know, I prefer reading minds or something. However, that was really he funny. Said that. I know. I love that line. I freaking know a Holly. Because I love their lines. But he can. I think he wants her to admit it. He wants her to say it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe so. Yeah. So that. Yeah. She can be the one to choose to go along that path versus him just knowing. But I love that because he still seems pretty erratic. Like, he's screaming, you know, oh yeah, they used to always tell me, David, don't huff the chemicals under the sink. Like, I'm supposed to do what? Pretend the voices aren't real? So he doesn't seem like he's totally got it together as a cult leader, but it's really funny. And then he sees, she sees him talking to himself, literally.
Yes.
What are you going to do with this one? Give her a wee nib of the blue stuff and sling her in with all the others? Like, that made me sort of question, okay, is this all just total bullshit? I mean, what I take that as is he's always got different voices in his head that represent different facets of his psyche. And so there is one psyche that part of his psyche that feels like he's just a pretender, but there may be other parts of him that really want to actually try to help people, or at least to try to create this blissful environment that will be good for everybody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But another part might just be like, no, this is all just bullshit, so you can have people to help protect you from Division 3 or something. I don't know. But anyway, so I think, you know, it was pretty, they really harped on her relationship with her father, mm-hmm. that they're disconnected. And when she tells her father that she's doing perfect in her classes, she didn't look very happy. And she may have even been lying, because when we see her in class, she's not even listening to the lecture. She's listening to her time travel lessons.
Mm-hmm. And doodling. She's drawing like Vermilion or something in her notepad, mm-hmm. or whatever. Yep.
And then, you know, she does save David without really knowing him. She saves his life. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she would do that if she was just answering the time travel ad. I think she wants or needs something from him. And when he asks her if she's all right, she finally starts mentioning that her dad collects those robots, and that she sometimes pretends she's a robot too. And she tells Farouk she's helping David because he's a man and you're a robot. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. One cool thing about Legion is they plant these seeds, but you don't really fully understand them until later on. Yeah. So I think we're going to get more on what this means, but maybe it's something about... David's more of a feeling person or an engaging, like there's a connection or humanity there. And she can tell that Farouk is just doesn't have that. It's more about, I don't know, him trying to manipulate something to get what he wants. I don't know. But she also doesn't drink David's tea.
Right.
So she doesn't fully trust him. I think, you know, we're just getting the beginning of the story, but my sense is that she does want help from David with whatever problems have stemmed from her poor relationship with her dad.
Right. But I wonder how she, again, I don't know if she just can read something off of him, because she doesn't know him or know anything about him. Mm-hmm. So how does she know that he could even help her? Maybe just because he's been able to transmit these messages to her and communicate to her, because, you know, he's sending out those messages like the radio when you hear Lenny's voice, you know, that she's able to pick up on that, and that she thinks, oh, well, this person's going to be able to help me with whatever.
Maybe it's just the whole cult environment and how everybody else seems satisfied, or maybe like it's
belongs,
that
sense of belonging.
Yeah. Or that she's seen him exhibit this power. I don't really know for sure. I hope we do find out more about that, because I was trying to figure it out too. Why did she help him? Why does she trust him? And why does she think she can get what she needs from him?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have those answers today. Like you said, we're only one episode in. And, it's one thing that Noah Hawley, he plants these, you know, little seeds. And like you said, it's once they all start to add up, then it presents that picture. So we're definitely not going to have anything figured mm-hmm. out today. I don't know if that I'll ever have anything figured out, but I definitely know it's not going to be in episode one.
Yeah. But sometimes, yeah, like going back, I'm like, I can be like, oh yeah, I kind of guessed at that. And then they fleshed it out later. So it's fun to try and see if we can guess and see if we were right. I did like that. After she was talking about, I think it was right after she told Farouk she was helping David because he's a man and you're a robot, that the scene shifted to Carrie making his Potonomy robot mm-hmm. with the Vermilion
yeah.
machine standing by. So I don't know if that's going to play later where she'll have some scenes with them and she won't like them or something.
Yeah, I wondered about that too, and the connections there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool.
Three.
So I've talked a little bit about time travel, but I want to talk about it since that seems to be going to be a really big part of this particular season and the last season that we have of Legion. Typically, any time that time travel is presented in a show, I'm like, oh no. because typically
it's going to make your brain hurt, and you'll think of things that don't really add up.
Exactly. But I thought this was a great representation of time travel in the show. I don't know why I doubted Noah Hawley at all. shame on me. I've learned my lesson. But I think that the introduction of time travel was done. It was very inventive. I thought it had a really great character building delivery device. I like how Hawley was kind of avoided the over-explaining how the impossible becomes possible. You know, it was just very simplistic in how she's able to just make a door, you know, and then go through a hallway. Or she could go through the floor. She went through the floor. She used that tray when she was with Farouk. But she's able to somehow make a door and then
traces a rectangle. And yeah. I liked how, like, the first time we see it, we don't know what the hell is going on, which is, you could say that about so many scenes in Legion. But she's listening to the radio and it said something like, you know, if you go back and listen, maybe you'll get the message. And then she, all of a sudden, we never knew she was a mutant, but she just like traces this blaze across the air.
Yeah. And you're like,
and
what the hell?
And then we realize later that what she did was, oh, okay, I'll just go back and listen to it right now.
It made me curious a little bit about her powers. Is it just that she is able to create the doorway that opens up into this like hallway where we see, you know, the different portals that she can go into like 30 minutes ago, an hour ago, 2 hours ago, and that she can pick a time to go back to? Or does she actually have the power to time travel? That's what makes me curious.
Well, yeah. I think she doesn't create two versions of herself. Like her time travel lessons, which is a whole nother question. Mm-hmm. Where the hell is she getting that?
Exactly.
How did she get them and stuff? But it says a good rule of thumb is give yourself a margin of error. You do not want to interrupt the time stream too often, but didn't say why. And that makes me think of that rule. Oh, maybe you don't want to meet yourself. But I think the way hers works is, and we saw her rewinding this tape, that it's more like she rewinds to an earlier point in her life and then she can take it again from there. Mm-hmm. So it's almost not like she's going back to where she was and would see herself. It's more like everything just rewinds and then she can keep going a different way if she wants.
That makes sense, because you notice how she can also kind of fast forward through boring conversations, or she can kind of fast forward up to a point. So that would make sense.
At least it seemed like that.
Yeah.
That's right. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome. And maybe that's how she's able to not run into herself. Like if she goes back,
I don't think so, because I think she wasn't there. Like, it's like if you, I don't know, you just, all of a sudden you just went, and we were back to the beginning of this podcast. It never happened yet. You know, it's not like there'd be another you there podcasting. It just wouldn't happen. But she does still have memories of the future that she went through. Mm-hmm. So for her, that future is kind of her past, which I think is one of the things that the time travel lessons said, future is past or something.
Oh, I love it. And see, at least this doesn't leave me all confused. I don't even
know for sure if it's this way, though, because then she, at one point when they were under attack, called to David. She started to open a door and she said, this way. And so that leads me to think that she can bring someone else in there with her. And if she does, then do they like go appear wherever each one of them was? What if he was in another state 30 minutes ago? Would he just appear there, or would they have been together? And I'm all wrong about how this works. Because if I'm right, then she needs to appear wherever she was, say 30 minutes ago, or whatever door she goes through, you know? At least in this episode, it was pretty simple. It was just like she could rewind back to an earlier point and take and do something different. And she went back an hour the first time and tried to warn David, but it wasn't in time because he teleported into the middle of the battle, but still got killed.
Yep.
And then, so then she went back, I think, 2 hours. And we didn't see that part, but then we saw that the whole compound was teleported away. So presumably she was able to get to David and convince him that he needed to get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That was cool too. But anyway, that was my number three.
All right. Well, I'll just make that the time travel stuff my number three too. Let me see if there's anything I want to say about it that we didn't already say. The whole I don't know what you would call it, just the way it was presented with the hallway, I thought was really interesting. And the doorways that say exactly how far back, 5, 10, 20, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing about, you know, it says many factors, one of the time travel lessons says many factors create life's episodes, factors that can't be altered within a finite period. Basically, it's saying you need to go back far enough so that you can actually alter the thing you want to alter. But then it goes on. But at the same time, we do not want to go back too far, for the further we go, the more we risk waking the demon. And then later you see that demon waiting down the hall mm-hmm. with its glowing eyes, which reminded me of early Shadow King. And it was making this weird chicken sound.
Yeah.
And I like that because I don't know if this is why Howley did it, but it placed a limitation on the time travel, which helps in a time travel story. Otherwise, you'll be saying, well, why don't you just go further back in the past? Well, because then she'll be eaten by this demon. It's an interesting way to limit the power.
Right. Which we don't always... Yeah, I think so. Because everything seems so limitless. And it's like, well, mm-hmm. does that seem real that everything is just limitless?
Because you always ask the question, well, shoot, why didn't they just go back even further and stop that bad thing that just happened or whatever, but we know that she can't do that. And I think the furthest we saw one of those doors was 4 hours, but she mm-hmm. got nervous.
Yeah, because I think that's when she kind of peered down the hall and you could kind of see that glare and that noise. And it reminded me of Farouk too. It reminded me of the yellow when you saw him in like the big fat Farouk or whatever from fat season bastard. One, the fat bastard, mm-hmm. and had the glowing yellow eyes. And it also reminded me of Farouk's sunglasses that he wears all the time, how the mm-hmm. the like image of like when a light reflects.
And you can't see into the windows of the soul with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
The other time travel thing I thought was interesting are these lessons, and the later ones seem practical, but the ones that we heard when she first appeared at the beginning of the episode sounded like a kind of a self-improvement tape, self-help tape or something, mm-hmm. or psychology of time travel. It was things like the present is not just a date. It's a feeling. Feel no shame about the past, no anxiety about the future. Every negative can be changed to a positive once you know how, which sounds like a cool time travel thing to do. Go back and change it. The weird one, nostalgia is your enemy. Don't think of the past while listening to music. That was interesting, mm-hmm. like, because you don't want to have a false idealized vision of the past or something like that. I don't know. But I thought that was just an indication maybe that she'd been struggling with the implications of these time travel powers and sought help, you know?
Yeah, I didn't think
she went to the bookstore and looked up time travel madness or something. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I think I must have missed that.
It just really seemed like it was trying to ease her mind about it, or at least teach her how to do it in a way that was healthy or effective or something like that.
Yeah. It's like last season's life lessons with John Hamm, but now they're...
Yeah. And I don't think we're going to get that this time, right? I think they kind of did that and we're done with that.
No, I think it's... Yeah, I think we're done with that, but I think this is kind of taking its place a little bit, you know, just in a different format, different voice, and a different subject. If we continue to get it, I mean, we're only in the first episode,
right?
So I don't know if we'll could be if a new we'll thing
every episode.
Yeah,
And this show just teaches you not to, like I was saying about the hook, to not question things too hard. Oh yeah, she found some time travel lessons. Cool.
Yeah, of course. Doesn't everyone?
It's a world where mutants exist.
Exactly.
So that really is it. It's like, what was the other thing? There was something else. Oh, just the whole time travel want ad. It's like when a world like this exists for a while, you're going to get stuff like this. You're going to get time travel self-help and people putting out want ads for mutants and things.
You're going to step on a flower that squeaks when you use it. Definitely. Squeals.
And then you're going to suck the ooze out of it and then go into a blissful trance.
Next time I see a blue flower.
Squeak, squeak. All right. Next time, next week.
Yep.
I want to do a podcast totally tripped out sometime. Anyway, that's another story. Okay, yeah. What's your number two?
I think this show just does it for me. I don't know that I need anything else when I watch this show, but I can't imagine. I've read a little bit about people, you know, doing drugs while watching this show, and I can't imagine.
Really?
Yeah, I can't imagine what that experience would be like. I feel like just watching this show
is
a drug. It would
seem normal.
Yeah, then what fun would that be? It wouldn't be just trippy anymore. But anyway, that would be an experience. Yeah, you guys should do that. You and Karen should light it up on the next Jason and Karen show.
We'll get one of those frogs.
Yeah, it's always blue. Anyway, sorry. My number two, we talked a little bit about it, and I could be making too much of it, but the man and robot reference. I'm curious if it will mean anything as the season continues. You know, when Switch says that her dad collects robots, she calls Farouk a robot, says David is a man. And I wondered maybe if the word robot is more of a metaphor, not like a literal robot.
Yeah.
Because we talked about like Farouk being a bad guy. I'm wondering if she's considering him like a robot that he can't change, that he'll always be bad. And David being a man can change. And I don't even know if I like that theory or not. I'm not sure if I would want David to change or if it's even possible for him to. But, and I could be totally wrong and it's fine. I could be just looking for meaning when there isn't any and confusing things. But I feel like Noah Hawley is really deliberate about what he does. And especially like with his writing and references that he makes and this reference to robots, because it kept coming up, like the like you said, the Vermilion, the new Potonomy. She references robots with her dad. She calls Farouk a robot. In the end, when we finally get the Legion card there at the end,
it's little robots.
The little toy robots that say Legion, and then you see one that looks like Switch, you know, coming across. So I feel like it's, you know, it made me curious. And I don't expect any answers today, of course, but I'm just wondering if it's going to mean something moving forward, or if we're going to learn a little bit about maybe what that really means.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I think it's probably more of a metaphor, kind of like I think of Mr. Spock, you know, you're so cold and unfeeling and things like that, you know, where she wants some connection, some warmth, some humanity, but I don't know. Not everything fits into that interpretation. So yeah, we'll see.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll see.
I just found it interesting and I'm curious if it'll mean anything moving forward or if we'll just be like, nope, never going to hear about it again and it's going to be okay.
Maybe. I doubt it. I think this is an important character and it would be pretty weird if she never showed up again or we didn't explore her. Who knows? I'm like, is this whole season just going to be David, I forgot his name for a second, David battling D3? I don't know. I mean, there's something coming up that I'm going to mention at the very end, but it might be a spoiler, so I'll wait. But I'm really excited about it. Anyways, can I do my number two?
Yeah, that's all that I wanted to say about my number two, but I did just find it funny that you forgot David's name when they say it like 20 times in episode. David, 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 David.
And he's in so much of this show. There was one episode last season that he wasn't even in, and it was a really good one, now I forgot the actor's name.
Dan Stevens.
Dan Stevens is so good.
He is.
He's just so good at that. This is like role was made for him.
I know.
Okay. So I was going to do this one earlier, but I'll slot it in now. It's just the methodology of this cult. And I think for the most part, cults attract vulnerable seekers with the promise of giving them purpose or making them feel better or stronger in some way. And also especially with David, priming them at the same time to do what he wants. So we have these signs around town. They're cryptic. Like, are you indivisible? Know yourself, own yourself. Beware the forces of mind control. Those who would tell you your name, who would call an arm a leg. They are not your mother, not your father. That's a little hypocritical which is typical of cults, because they did end up renaming her. And he's saying, beware of those who would tell you your name. But that's simultaneously a call to, hey, we can teach you how to be better. And also beware of this thing that's my enemy. You know, he's like embedding that in there. Mm-hmm. And I know other cults do that. They have their enemies that they teach all their members to despise to an unreasonable degree like that. And they're like, find your stable center. Do you want to be whole of mind to body, free from division? Intoxicate yourself, but beware, the basket is watching. So he's training them that Fukuyama is this bad guy. And then there's the thing about Vermilion. Maybe this is actually what caught Switch's eye, actually. It's something something would call normal abnormal. Beware the homogeny of milk, the industrialization of cheese. No two cookies are alike unless they're cut from the machine. Don't trust the mustache. The mustache is his eyes and ears. He, she is everywhere. If you see him, her, which is a comment on their androgyny, hold your breath. Think only of cookies made by hand at home, for only they are indivisible. I actually think, now that I think about it, that's probably what caught her eye, because that feeds into the whole machine robot coldness kind of a thing versus the warmth and individualness of humanity or something like that.
I like all that. Yeah. Gosh, I forgot all that was said. There was so much.
It's all, I mean, this is what's written in on all these posters around town. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I'm talking about sort of the methodology, and it's very cryptic, which gets a person trying to figure it out. And so it's like a challenge which can hook you in. And then there are these other challenges to overcome, these hoops to jump through, which make it feel like this is an exclusive club and something you have to work to get into. So it's a relief when you're on the inside. That whole wardrobe maze, which was amazing, was something that she had to figure out. And this whole pregnant virgin riddle. And those symbols, they look like vaginas. Is that... Am I? Did you see that, or am I?
No,
I'm failing the Rorschach test. Okay, whenever they said pregnant virgin, they show that circle with the.
It to me looked. It was an image of a woman with her head slightly bowed down a little and a pregnant belly. Yes,
you're kidding. Okay,
no, that look again. Okay, I did not see vagina.
Okay, maybe it was because they were talking about pregnant virgins.
Oh, a tree like Sid. Do it again.
I'm leaving this in. So, anyways, the answer is salmon, and I looked up salmon. At least that's what I got out of it. The pregnant virgin, the orange fish. And salmon females lay eggs and then they're fertilized by the males, but I don't think the salmon are ever pregnant. They're virgins, I think, because they just lay their eggs.
And then they come over and spray them their with stuff sperm. All over them. Yeah.
And then there was a particular call towards Switch herself, this whole time traveler ad, the forces of multiplication need you, which is another antithetical to Division 3, painting division as a word, meaning this divides you and we're about multiplication. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he says, resist division. Do not surrender to regret. Only you can help us unwrite the past, but beware, the basket is watching. Find the orange fish. So, and then there was the whole radio. She saw a radio station, 89.1 or something, and heard that cryptic message. And it was all like a puzzle for her to follow the yellow bus, but it wasn't even yellow. And the bus said on the side, aren't you lonely? Don't you wish the world was simple again? Another cult's appeal / promise. So this whole thing really drew her in, and it's hard to get into, which makes it even more appealing, I think.
That's true. They don't just open the door for you. Mm-hmm. You have
that kind of stuff. I mean, one reason why I'm fascinated with cults is because this kind of thing, I mean, I've flirted on the fringes of groups that were kind of like this, where you all belong to something, and sometimes there's even, you start using a language that other people don't use, words and things. And I also think that cults really play into that whole thing about sanity that John Hamm was saying last year about how, you know, humans are the only ones where our whole society agrees on the meaning of something. And so if you don't agree, then you're considered insane. And with a cult, you get sometimes a whole group of people who decide on different meanings of things. And so they seem insane to everybody else outside. But if the whole world decided to agree with a cult, then everybody would just be sane.
Right.
It's just really interesting to me. I don't know.
Rambling. It is. I'm fascinated by cults and, you know, how they work. And because it's easy to sit back on the outside when you're watching these things. Like, you know, we've talked before about like the Netflix documentary, The Wild Wild West, about the cult over on the West Coast. And of course, with the whole NXIVM thing going on, that's been a big, you know, topic in our group. You know, cults and such. And, you know, it's easy to watch stuff like that from the outside and go, what in the world? How in the world are you so drawn to this? This is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. But at the same time, I can also see the appeal. I can see both sides of the coin. And you can see how it's easy to be, you know, kind of drawn in, especially if you're in a vulnerable place.
Yeah. And if you're in there feeling really connected to all the people, and feeling like you're helping other people who were really stuck or feeling shitty, and they come to an event or a session or something, and it's like their whole world opens up and suddenly they're alive again, then it feels really great. But the problem is when it gets so insular and they are so much in their own reality that and they're told not to connect with their family because they'll bring them back to their past unhealthy self. So that basically means you're cut off from the people who care about you. And then what often happens is the cult leader gets so full of himself because they're centered on one person that's adored by everybody else in the cult and put up on a pedestal, which would be so much easier to do with somebody like David, who's all powerful, that they just get full of themselves and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. They just start sleeping with all the women in the cult, taking everybody's money and rationalizing to themselves that it's actually for everybody's own good. But eventually it just feels like a big sickness and it all falls apart.
Yep. It doesn't usually last long or end well.
Yeah. But there's some that are going strong.
There's some.
All right. Number one.
My number one, I wanted to talk a little bit about Farouk. I know we've already kind of discussed him. There may not be too much more interesting things that I have to say, but I feel like we shouldn't really trust him at this point. And I feel like he's totally fooling Division 3 still, that he has them under his spell. And I was really curious when he intercepted Switch and they're in the astral plane and she tells him, you know, well, that why did that blonde kill him? And he really seems surprised by that. And then he later tried to keep Sid from going on the mission. And I was like, well, why does he not? Like, they're all out to kill David and he's supposed to be on their side. But when he finds out that she's going to kill him, that he seems to try to prevent that from happening. So I thought, what is his goal here? Then if he's trying to prevent them, if he's on their side and they feel that they have to kill David because it's his destiny to kill the world or destroy the world, and he hasn't even done it yet, but that's, you know, we've talked about that a little bit, that he's basically being punished for crimes he hasn't committed yet, but they're saying that that's his destiny. So he's trying to stop that. And I'm curious why and what his motives are. I mean, I know we're not going to have the answer for that right now, but I want to kind of see how that develops and wanted to get your thoughts on that, what you picked up from that.
Yeah, I mean, he's talking about how, you know, I'm glad that she referenced that David took advantage of her because I don't want that just forgotten. She said, you know, he's not even the first one that took advantage of me.
Yeah, right.
I assume she's referring to the whole sex after mind wipe thing. And that to him makes him think, okay, you're doing this because of revenge. And so he's saying, he mentions all that love, it doesn't just disappear. It must be transformed into an emotion of equal intensity, which it sounds true. Like, it made me think of how people who are deeply in love can end up just passionately hating each other sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know? You just transform it. And I think he's a bullshitter, but I think when he says, like, that's the law of the universe, I feel that that's probably the one honest thing that he really says.
I mean, maybe, yeah.
I don't think you just stop. If you truly are really passionately in love with someone, I don't believe that that just goes away. You can maybe be really angry at that person, not want to be with that person, but I don't really believe that you just stop loving that person. I think that maybe that love just translates into another emotion.
A little definitive to me. Like sometimes it can fade away over time. It doesn't just automatically all turn to hate. But anyway, I think what he was getting at was that she's too emotional right now. And maybe it would be a detriment to the whole thing. And I don't know if he really thought, you know, hey, you might mess this up because of how you're feeling, and we really want to make sure. But the fact is they went in and she's the one who got the shot in, and then when they had to do it over again because of the time travel, she did it again, which was really shocking to see, by the way.
Yeah.
But so maybe he thought he was wise because he's been around for 2,000 years, but he was just wrong. Maybe that's kind of what it looked like to me, but maybe there's some other motive that we're not thinking of.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he wants David dead. So I think.
Really?
I don't think
he wants David dead. Remember in season two at the end when he was talking about, you know, whenever he's like, telling David, you can't make someone love you. Believe me, I've tried. Because he said, you know, I tried with you. And he called him my baby.
Yeah, that was bullshit. He didn't try to make David love him. He tortured him and terrified him his whole life.
But I think that he's got bigger plans for both of them. I think he wants to somehow join forces with David. I don't think he wants to kill him. And I think in maybe his own twisted way does somehow care about him.
Well, maybe that's why then. Maybe he thought that Sid would actually be the most effective killer, so he was trying to keep her out of it.
Yeah. Well, she seemed to be the only one that killed him. And why her? Yeah. Because he was looking at all the other soldiers and everyone coming around and just flicking his wrist and slinging gun, you know, fire away from him and, you know, flicking people with ease. But then she comes out, and I know that she kind of surprised him. Like, she kept shooting him in the back, you know, from behind.
If you're going to give someone the special gun that actually has the power to kill him, and his ex-girlfriend who still has feelings for is willing to do it, then I think she would be the right one to do, because it might trip him up.
Maybe. Like, he wouldn't be expecting Sid to be the one to pull the trigger.
Yeah,
so
it might
throw
him off guard. It was shocking to me. Like, wow.
Yeah, it was me too.
We saw her kill him twice.
Yeah.
So my number one is about that whole attack too. And we've talked it mostly out. It was jarring to see Shadow King with Division 3, but the line between friends and enemies is always shifting on the show. And Division 3 was the bad guys in season one. And then we saw everybody join up with them. So it's interesting how that shifts.
It was disturbing to see David keep killing Carrie.
Yeah.
I was like, no, don't kill Carrie.
But hell, man, she chopped his arm off.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Like, that's war, you know? I mean, it was disturbing for sure, but he was doing it in self-defense.
Yeah.
She's bad news.
Yeah. But it's hard to see the people that rallied absolutely around him and helped him in season one, and you know, then trying to help, you know, kind of figure out what happened there in season two, where was David and what's going on and with the Shadow King and everything, but they're all still friends and such. And then just to see them all now turning on him and he's just wiping them out like nothing. It's just difficult.
Now we know what he'll do given, you know, that situation, even though
he didn't hesitate.
Been erased. Yeah. Because, I mean, she chopped his arm off. That's pretty bad. Then a couple other random things about that. At the last minute, Carrie hands them brainwave blocking headbands. I thought, man, seems like that would have been planned earlier and talked about a little bit, but whatever. So that was a cool, that feels like it comes right out of the comics. Just put this on and he won't detect you.
Right. Well, it kind of helped, you know, because in the beginning, we don't know that the first time that they come in, and you're like, how the hell can they just surprise him like that? Like, just drop in and he doesn't know. I mean, he can read minds. How can he not sense, you know, that they're closing in on him? So then we get that later, like, oh, here, you know, I've got our soldier guys here built that into their helmets. Make sure that you're wearing one or whatever. It'll block your thoughts. And you're like, oh, so that's why he can't hear them or sense them. So
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. That was another cool thing about the episode, that with the time travel, we actually got to see that preparation for the battle that we had seen earlier. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. Okay, let's get into notes.
Notes. I really liked, I'm curious about Sid's tattoo. She had a tattoo that said first. And I'm curious.
Well, if it said on one wrist, it said me.
And I think first.
And then first.
Me first.
And I thought that might have meant I'm taking care of myself now.
I think so. Because I think that she feels like she might have gotten too wrapped up in David. And now she's lost herself. Yeah, and then she was putting herself first. And I think that's kind of what she was telling him in the finale too. You know, she's like, mm-hmm. he's like, baby, don't you trust me? And she's like, I trust myself more.
<That's>
Yeah, and so she's like, and, me first.
And even though, like, there's definitely a part of me that feels like the Shadow King, maybe everything could have turned out fine if there was no Shadow King. There's another part that just wonders if David is just kind of toxic too, which I'm sure Noah Hawley would love to hear me say that because he wants us to not be sure.
Yep. He's definitely comfortable with the uncertainty.
Yeah.
Or at least making us be uncertain. Right. He's certain because he knows how it ends.
I felt a little critical about this show at first because I thought it was a little bit style over substance, but I think it's been a really good exploration of psychosis and psychology and mindfuck and not quite having a handle on things and how sometimes things can seem a certain way, and if you believe it enough, they really are that way. But if you get tripped up, then you can get derailed, and then it feels like it was always a lie, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's this point in time where you could continue on with something positive and it actually is totally real, but if you had gotten tripped up, then you would feel like, no, it was all a lie, things like that, because it's a little uncomfortable sometimes to watch.
Sometimes, yeah. Especially some things in season two.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other notes?
Just a few. I noticed that when Switch walked into the room right before Lenny came in, when she walked into the room, that giant clock that was right in front of her, the time was 11:11. I love that. Did you notice that, or do you even have any?
What does it mean?
Well, I think it can mean different things to different people, but I think, some people see 11:11 and it's like they make a wish on that, or it's supposed to be some kind of like whimsical, you know, kind of meaning, like, you know, when you see 11:11 and like the date 11:11, mm-hmm. just
all the ones.
Yeah. So I noticed that. I like the line, why don't we have a time traveler? that's a fair question.
I liked when Carrie... or Patonomy was like, why do I have a mustache? And he goes, oh, well, they had one, so I just thought.
It's kind of signify, well, all the robots around here have mustaches.
I don't know.
I love Carrie. He's like so just kind of awkward sometimes, he's awesome. So adorable. I love both Carries. So I like that line, and I thought, well, yeah, that's a fair question. Why don't you have one? Significant music cues of the week, because this show just blows me away. When I think it can't anymore, it continuously does with their music. So we talked already about Something for Your Mind there in the beginning with Superorganism. I loved the end when they did it was another Noah Hawley, Jeff Russo remix of the Steve Miller Band's Fly Like an Eagle. Mm. Loved that.
Nice.
I thought it was interesting that, you know, Switch can time travel, but she seems to have to pay a price for it. Do you notice she lost her tooth and how she kept favoring it throughout the episode?
Yeah. So there's another limitation because, I guess Sid found it at the end there.
Mm-hmm. Like you would see her sometimes, like she would kind of touch it before she went through a doorway. And then the last time she touched it, and then you could see like her tongue kind of run over that tooth.
Yeah.
And then Sid finds it there at the end. It's like, oh, so she's kind of has a price to pay for the amount of times that she keeps looping back, I guess, or either looping back or just time travel in general. I'm not sure. I'm guessing we'll probably learn more about that, but it was kind of like, oh, gross. I was just seeing a tooth being picked up. Thought it was interesting of note that the director for this episode was Andrew Stanton. He's an American film director, screenwriter, producer. He was based at Pixar. He joined in 1990. His work includes co-writing Pixar's A Bug's Life, Finding Nemo, and its sequel Finding Dory, WALL-E, And he co-wrote all four Toy Story films and Monsters, Inc. And he has directed no episodes of Legion before. So I thought it was really interesting because I felt like there was a little bit of Pixar flavor in this episode.
Yeah.
And I thought it was...
The spinning cup. Yeah, and he's talent. He's they get talent attracted to the show because it's so, so different.
Yep. So that's all my notes.
Okay. So the whole please stand by pattern at the beginning, that was what used to appear on TVs when all the broadcasts was done for the day. You'd see please stand by and then beep, have this tone back in the 60s and 50s. And I found out it was a pattern built into cameras, vacuum tubes to allow calibration and focus and adjustments, framing and contrast and stuff like that.
Interesting.
And I think the significance is just it's supposed to be like Legion's been off the air and it's about to come back on.
Oh, that makes sense. I like that.
But then it morphs, please stand by, morphs to bedtime is here, which I don't know, maybe putting the series to bed. I don't know.
Oh, it's so sad. I hate this so much. I mean, it's good, but it's...
Yeah.
I'm so sad to see this series come to an end at the same time. I just want more. I mean, we really don't deserve this show. We just don't. It's...
That's funny. I wish, I'm glad that he has an arc in mind and that he's going to fulfill it the way he wants to. I wish it was a 5-season arc, but this is great too.
Yep.
I never understood before, or else we figured it out and I forgot, but what cornflake girl meant and why Lenny's called that. But I looked it up finally, and there's this song by Tori Amos.
Cornflake girl. That was in season 2. Yeah.
And it's because they, someone called her the queen of breakfast cereal or whatever this episode. So they always call her something cornflakes. And even Aubrey Plaza did this whole ASMR thing with cornflakes on YouTube for like 45 minutes or something.
She's so great.
But it was, the song is about, was inspired by something really horrible. This practice of female genital mutilation in Africa and where a close female family member would betray the victim by performing the procedure. And Amos said that growing up, the name they gave girls who would hurt you despite close friendships was cornflake girls. Because like there's the raisin girls, which are the good ones, and then the cornflake girls. And so Lenny's a cornflake girl. She's somebody who would hurt you despite your close friendship. I think that's what it means anyway.
Yeah, I think we talked about that a little bit in season 2 when they called her that. I think we kind of dove into that a little bit about the meaning of the song or what Tori Amos says, that she felt was the meaning of that. And it, I think, made total sense given Lenny's character.
Another note, Shadow King said something I thought was pretty sexist. He said, I had relations with a time traveler once. Geraldine, is it true that you're always women? Pourquoi? Maybe it has something to do with regret, choices made and not made, opportunities missed.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well, I thought it was a little sexist too. That's about all I could come up with. I was like, well, screw you.
Men have regret.
Yeah.
An opportunity is interesting. He's an old-fashioned kind of guy.
He's been around 2,000 years.
I like that Carrie's now hungry all the time, and she used to like hate food, but she got a taste of cream soda, and now she's like a child resisting at first, but then when she discovers what she likes, she compulsively wants it.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny because I thought, you hated all that stuff. You said Carrie has to do all the boring stuff like eating and whatever you guys do in the bathroom or whatever.
Now she's like in the bathroom pooping all the time. And then lastly, this is a little bit spoilery for something coming up this season. Character. So if you don't want to hear that, I would just skip ahead to the next segment. We have chapters, but it'll also be just like a minute or something. So we know that Harry Lloyd, who played Viserys Targaryen on Game of Thrones, is coming on at least for one episode, maybe more, to play Professor X, which is awesome. Yes. David's father. And I was wondering why they would have picked such a young guy, but now I'm wondering if it's going to be a time travel thing.
I think you're right.
Maybe, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope it's more than one episode.
I hope that he's in at least a few. I feel like the story, you know, it's been teased so much. I know some folks have probably been able to remain unspoiled, not watched any kind of previews or really read, you know, what to expect. But I feel like that's been put out there enough that most folks probably know. And I feel like we kind of have to. I don't know that they're going to be able to tell enough story with him in it in just one episode. I feel like we at least need two.
We'll see. Yeah, hopefully. But I'm looking forward to it.
I am too.
All right. That's it for our coverage. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. I know you think I'm a psychopath. Democrat lurking in the dark. This sucks. I'm the Kmart soda jerk. So do trash. I kept the stash of Coca candy straight from Japan. Hologram and she was never as near. Think you know what I need to get by. Something for your
mind. Okay, so news about Legion that we have this week. We have a couple of items. First one we have is from The Hollywood Reporter. This is taken from an interview with Noah Hawley, a.k.a. God. sorry, not really. He's my God. I worship at the altar of Noah Hawley. So Noah Hawley somehow
he should start a cult.
Sign me up. I will drink the blue juice. I'll suck the teat of a giant pig, whatever he asks. I love this guy. He can do no wrong. But Noah Hawley somehow found time for yet another journey, because we know he's like the busiest guy in Hollywood. I don't know that people know that or not, but he's like so busy. So he finds time for one last trip through the mind of David Haller, based on Marvel's relatively obscure X-Men comic book of the same name. He says, I'm not really sure how we managed it, he says about wrapping Legion. He says, I was editing the movie while I was creating this. I do feel like it ends for me the way it was meant to end. It feels like a really strong proof of concept, taking something that can be whimsical, dramatic, slightly horrifying, character-driven genre piece, and using it as a mediation on mental illness and the abuse of power and all of the other things it's probably about.
That really sums it up, boils it down.
Exactly. That's why he's genius. He says, the show becomes about parenting and the idea we have to raise our kids the right way. We have to give them a moral center, and we have to teach them about restraint, responsibility, and the way they interact with other people. He says, there's always a moment in Fargo, his other show, if you guys have not heard of that, which is wonderful. He says, there's always a moment in Fargo where the worst person on the show says, I'm the victim here. He says, with David, there's a similar mentality, a narcissism and a sense of entitlement. He has this mantra now, I'm a good person and I deserve love. He uses it to justify a lot of behavior that's just not good behavior. He sees himself on some level as above morality because of what he suffered. He believes he is by definition a moral person, so everything he does is therefore moral. I think it's worth an exploration. Historically, much of the audience of this material is young men and boys, adolescents and older, and it's important to have conversations about the power men have and the responsible use of it and the things they feel entitled to and they take for granted. You have to have those conversations out loud. He says, if we're rooting for the love story with David and Sid, but that love story starts to come apart in season two, and there's a moment where he erases her memories to buy himself time so he can be with her. But in doing so, he removes her consent, and then he goes to her in the night. There's a part of the audience who wants this love story to work, so maybe they're okay with it, all the way to the point where she basically says, you drugged me and had sex with me. Then the audience goes, oh, shit. Right. That was not good. That's immoral behavior. You're presenting your audience with these challenges about rooting for this character and also seeing the behavior clearly. And he says, if I've done my subjective job right, you've been in David's mind for this whole time. And now at the end of the second season, you've realized he's an unreliable narrator. He talks a little bit about Switch in the introduction of her. He says the reason why the third season starts with an entirely new character for the first 20 minutes is we're now creating an objective way into the story. The first time you see David now in season 3 is through someone else's eyes. It's not subjective anymore. This guy's proven to be an unreliable narrator. We're looking at him from the outside now rather than from the inside. Mm. It's not to say that we won't go back to his point of view, but I feel it was important to switch the point of view for the audience.
Interesting.
I know.
Yeah, that's it's good. Even though kind of through podcasting, we we came to that, it's gratifying to hear him say pretty much the same things that we, conclusions that we reached.
Yep.
About, absolutely. You know, I mean, even just this episode, I was saying, I bet he would be happy to hear me say that I wasn't sure if David was bad the whole time. And that's what he's kind of saying. Oh yeah, he's an unreliable narrator.
Yep, absolutely. You cool. are right on the nose. So we have a second item from Collider. This is taken from an interview with Dan Stevens, who plays David Holler. They ask him, how does it feel to do the last season of the show and have to say goodbye to this character? He says, it's a real privilege in a way. I'm extremely proud of having been a part of something so uniquely weird. The fact that we managed to get three seasons is a wonderful thing. Noah always pitched it to me as a three-season story arc. Obviously, we weren't allowed to say that at the beginning because everybody in this age feels like things should run and run. But to have a story with a beginning, middle, and end that's so uniquely crafted is something that I feel will exist out there. I wouldn't be intimidated to take on a three-season show and be like, somebody told me about the show Legion, so I'll give that a go if it was like 19 seasons. And I'd be like, ugh, I'm not going to watch that. And one season would not be enough. So we're going to have 26 chapters of this thing, and I'm just so happy to have been a part of it with a uniquely weird and talented bunch of people behind it.
Wait, 26 chapters? That means there's only seven. I'm confused.
He might be wrong. Maybe he's wrong. I don't know. But I'm telling you, there's eight episodes. Okay. IMDb says so.
I wonder if... you know, IMDb...
Yeah, it does say chapter 27.
IMDb isn't always right.
It's not always right, but I'm relying on it for today.
Oh, chapter 27. Yeah, that would be eight. All right, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. So they go on to say, in the comics, the nature of David's condition would change. Does it feel like he's consistently in the same condition, or has it progressed? Dan Stevens says, I would say it has progressed. In some of the comics, sometimes it's multiple personality disorder, sometimes it's paranoid schizophrenia, sometimes it's something else. Ultimately, it's none of those things because he's a mutant and his mind has been occupied by Amal Farouk. I believe medical science has not got a name for exactly what that is, but medical science doesn't really have a name for a lot of things that are not too dissimilar. That's part of the point. Doctors are going to call David's condition all sorts of things, but it's none of them. We get to be playful with some of those symptoms and really just produce some of the experience of some of those things. The more David understands his own condition and his own makeup, our appreciation of what's up with him changes, and narratively it changes as well. We start to see more of what's inside. Going from season one, it just seemed to be this guy who was really having a tough time mentally, but now we get to really dig inside and bring some of that out. And I get to bring some of that out as well, which makes for a playful narrative as well.
Cool.
So yeah, that's about it out of that one. Really great interviews. If mm-hmm. anyone wants to see them, you know, I'll post the full interviews, but they do go on quite a lot. I'm happy to share those because they're really great, complete interviews with Noah Hawley and Dan Stevens both.
Yeah. Yeah. Really like both of those. Yeah. And when you say you'll post it, that's on Facebook, facebook.com/LegionPod. That's where we get your comments before each episode or after each episode that we might read during the podcast. And then sometimes Rima posts interesting stuff on there about the show.
I think it's interesting anyway. You guys might not like it so much, but I hope you do.
Yeah, it's cool. All right. Speaking of listener feedback, we didn't get a lot this week, but we did get a couple things. We call this section Mental Notes, and our one written note comes from Matthew J. Morrison, who says about the episode, amazing. I love the show so much. I have no idea what's happening, but I can't stop watching, and I want more.
That's I see that written so much. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm watching, but I just know I want more of it.
I love it.
It's so good. I just can't ever describe this show enough to people who've never watched. They're like, really? Well, what's it about? And I'm like, oh, shit. Just here. Just sit down and watch it.
I'm like, it's great. You watch it and you feel like you're schizophrenic. And they're like, oh.
but it's
really good.
I know. They think that sounds really weird. Like, why would you want to feel that way? But I'm like, you do. When you watch it, you want to.
Okay, and we have one call. It's from Steve Brown, and I'm going to play it right now.
Is this a cult? Yes. Hello, Legion Cast. This is Steve, and just had a few quick notes because I was watching this for the second time. I started jotting down even more notes and thought I'm going to run way long, so I'm cutting it off. Where does this take place in the 3 years later that we saw in the last episode of season 2 with Melanie and Oliver? Or was that 3 years later just a MacGuffin or a whatever, something to throw us off? But it just, that puzzled me at first because, you know, I rewatched season two and that last episode starts with a little 3 years later with Melanie and Oliver in his Ice Cube mindscape. And they're talking about that the world has already ended. And then here we are at this point where that hasn't happened yet. So just figured, trying to think of where that, where this episode or where we're at in that timeline. And David's looking for a time traveler. David needs love. Squirrel, the alchemist. He gets hooked. That was great. Do you think there's more people in his circle that are superpowered, or is it just him? I wasn't sure about that. And I absolutely loved the callback to the Cornflake Queen being Lenny. If I hadn't rewatched season two, I probably would have totally forgot that when the blonde girl says the Cornflake Queen, and then later they say the breakfast cereal queen is coming, I would have totally forgot about that, but I'm so glad to rewatch season two and get that. So I just love the show is back, and it's got me confused, but I can't wait to see how they wrap it up. Talk to you later.
Confused, but I love it.
That's what everyone says. I don't know how long the time was between season two. I'm guessing at least a handful of months.
Don't really know, but it's enough time for him to sort of set up this group as a cult. And right. I assume it's before the 3 years. But I also feel like that 3 year thing was just a way to get Oliver and Melanie to have a happy ending. And I think we probably won't see them again.
No, I don't. I think that was a way to kind of write them off, and that was our goodbye to them. Mm-hmm.
I was kind of wondering if this was going to be a big mutant cult, but I think the only ones we know for sure that have powers are David and Switch, mm-hmm. and maybe there's others, but I don't think Lenny does. She's got Amy consciousness inside her, maybe, so that might be sort of weird.
Yeah.
But he mentioned the blonde girl. I forgot to mention that back
the other Janine,
the episode, that featured Lenny and she and her. They had their like hot lesbian sex scene, and then later she comes out patting her belly and says,
"You expecting a prince?"
Yeah, and that was it. Was suggested that it was going to be their child, and you're like, "Huh? How did that happen?" But now and they're calling her the pregnant virgin
who's penis free penis for 25 free. Years.
So I don't, that's a big question I have. What the fuck is going on there? Interesting.
Yeah. And well, and if that's true, if she somehow conceived in that moment from season two and she looks like she could potentially give birth at any moment, she looked pretty heavy with child, it could good be point. Maybe 8 or 9 months.
Yeah.
You know, after that, I guess that could establish a timeline if that's, you know,
we'll say that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to go with that. But I love that the Lenny Cornflake, when they were talking about the Cornflake Queen or Queen of Breakfast, and I was thinking Lenny, Queen of Breakfast, Froster of Flakes, first of her name. I don't know. I love Lenny. She's mm-hmm. such a great character. She was smoking ass hot in that like jumpsuit thing that she was wearing too. She's all, so great.
Oh, are you a swinger?
No, switch I hitter? Like men.
Why?
Why? She's been penis free too.
She hasn't though. That's a thing.
Nope.
All right. Now we're just going to, we're going a little long, but I thought it would be cool just to say a couple things that we're hoping for this season. What's like the main couple of things that you're hoping for?
What am I hoping for? Kind of want to find out what's up with the robots. That's kind of a lame one, but it's sticking in my brain. I'm really curious, will we see David become Legion World Killer?
Me too.
You know, because are
Legion
they gonna go there?
Suggests multiple personalities. That's why he's called that, because there's a legion of people inside him. And in the comic, as I've said on this podcast before, probably each one of those has a different power. I don't think we're going to see exactly that, but we did maybe see not. That vision last year of him with Lenny at his feet and his hair spiked up with his tracksuit or whatever.
Yes, he looked very much I thought was amazing because he looked very much more like the comic character than he ever had in this show. And I know that this show is loosely based. I know that they take I just think, you know, will he really fulfill this destiny? But I do feel like they're kind of exploring that Legion part because they called him that in season two. Yeah. That's the first time we ever heard that uttered aloud. The show's called Legion. We see it every week. But
I don't remember that part anymore.
Melanie called him that whenever she was showing Sid. David
Legion,
was torturing
World Killer.
Says Legion, yeah. World Killer, and she calls him that. And then we've seen that, like you said, that vision of him holding this crystal ball looking thing, and his hair spiked in that jumpsuit, and it looks like a pregnant Lenny writhing on the ground and being all weird. So I'm curious if we'll go there. And I feel like we got a little peek at that little Scottish version of him when Switch starts to open that door and he's gathering the tea when he's getting ready to come out to her. I mean, we saw that in the end of season two as well, when he had these different versions of himself, you know, talking to him, arguing with him. So I'm wondering if we'll get a little taste of that. I think that's super fun. And the ending, I just want it doesn't have to be a happy ending. But I want it to be a satisfying one. Now, I don't know what the hell is going to happen. I feel like I can't predict what Noah Hawley will do or what journey he'll take us on. But I'm okay with it not being happy. I just want it to be satisfying. So that's it. Those are my big things.
I hope that we would get a happy ending. That would be subverting my expectations. But I really would not bet anything on that, not even $5, because I'm totally expecting a tragedy and I'm ready for that. So, and I'll be happy with that too, because I love this show and I just have had a sense for so long that that's where it's headed. But with all the downer TV lately, you know, and I mean, I'm a little sad because we got to see David so mentally off balance in season one, and then he got rid of Farouk, and then for a while there it seemed like, oh, this is like so nice, they're in their white room, him and Sid, and they had, you know, it just seemed like he was really together and centered and connected, and now it's all trashed, and so now we're on like the come down, and Noah Hawley knows how to make that really fun and a great experience, even when terrible things are happening. So I'm ready for it, but there is definitely a part of me that just wishes that they could be happy together. So that's not going to happen.
No, I don't. He's going to destroy me because I mean, I totally get the whole thing with what he did with Sid. So I just feel like that's going to completely prevent them from getting back together or ever having a reconciliation or things being, you know, the same that they were before. I have a feeling it might be a little bit of a bittersweet ending.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. You're probably right. I mean, I'm always trying to figure out if a show. Well, let me start that over. I'm most impressed when I feel like a show is true to itself. So I've said this a few times, but Game of Thrones, I feel like is well established as a lot of cruelty and getting you to hope for something and then pulling the rug out. And so I would have been critical of that show if the last season had been all nice, and it wasn't. And I thought that was perfect for the show. In other examples, if there's a dumb comedy and it's just a dumb comedy, I'm like, yeah, I'm on board with that. If I'm laughing, that's great. But shows that really are ambitious and try to do something big and fail, then I'm kind of critical of it. Like, oh, it didn't really work. For Legion, I could see them pulling off a happy ending and making it work for the show. I don't think they're going to do that, but I think Noah Hawley could do it if he wanted to and make it work and it wouldn't feel like a cop out. I don't know. I could be wrong about that, but that's just my feeling.
I mean, I feel like this guy is the magic man. David calls himself the magic man. I feel like Noah Hawley is the magic man. So I feel like this guy can pull off anything. He impresses me at every turn. Seriously. I'm just, I love him every time.
Yeah. I think we're on the same way. I mean, he just knows how to do it with style and intelligence that he could just do whatever and it would work.
Yep.
It almost seems like that. All right. We're fawning way too much. So
yep. I know. No, Holly needs to start spreading the bucks around.
Yeah.
Thanks for all the love.
All right, that is our show, episode 20. Thanks for listening, everybody. Glad to be back.
I know. It's been so long, and I'm so happy the show is back.
Yeah. So if you guys want to get in touch with us, write, ask questions, comments that we'll read on the podcast, you can email or you can send a voice message to us at legion@podcastica.com.
You can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check out our other shows at podcastica.com. Strange Indeed, which Rima hosts with Sean, is about to start covering Stranger Things.
Stranger Things comes back next week. I know. Amazing. Season 3. Yeah, awesome. Lots of exciting TV getting ready to happen here.
Yep. And also, check out baldmove.com too. They are the best. They cover so many shows so intelligently with wit and style, and I'm always in awe of those guys. And next week, we're going to be fortunate enough to have Aaron with us for the rest of the season. So that's going to be super fun.
Yeah, I can't wait.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
And don't forget, the basket is watching.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.